Back with Joshua Melville right now. Josh, could you please repeat what you said at the end of the last the prior segment about anger?
Sure. Sure. Well, you had said that you feel that the anger that the radicals had was a product of their own failures in life. And what I was responding with was I interviewed many, many radicals, and I asked every one of them, why bomb buildings? Why do all this angry stuff? Why not just protest? You know, protesting is how we generally resolve things in this country. That's the democratic process. And they all felt the same way. They all had the same answer. They all would have disagreed that it was personal anger that had to do with them personally. All of them would have externalized and said, no, this was because Nixon was corrupt. We had to get rid of Nixon, and America was involved in an illegal war. And that never resonated with me because all wars end. And most of these bombings that took place in 1969 and 1970. This was when Nixon had 3 years left on his second term. And so sometimes I would push back and say, wait a second, you bombed buildings, you sacrificed your life and liberty and potentially injuring others, get rid of a president that would be out of office anyway in the next 3 years.
And what answer did you get, John? What answer did you get?
They kind of just looked at me like as if I didn't get it. And maybe I don't, you know, but I didn't get it. And what I was starting to realize was in my viewpoint, a lot of their actions were, as you said, results of their own personal agendas. Their war against the state was a personal war. They may have externalized it and come up with rationalizations like Nixon was corrupt, America was involved in an illegal war. They may have come up with all of these rationalizations, but each of them, in my view, would have found some other thing to be upset and angry about were those circumstances not in place. And I think history now proves that I'm right, because what we're experiencing right now over the last year with, you know, so-called peaceful protests in Wisconsin and Seattle and other cities, we're not in an illegal war now. So what's the excuse now to loot stores? And of course, they have one. You know, they always have one. No one ever just wakes up and says, no, I'm just an angry, you know, asshole. Excuse me, I don't know if I can use that word. And yep. I'm just going to go loot stores because I want a TV, because I'm just pissed off at my parents, because I'm upset with this. I have so much student debt and I'm overeducated and can't get a decent job. No one wakes up and says, I'm going to destroy society because of that. They have to find some other socially acceptable reason to do it. In the 60s, it was Nixon in Vietnam. Now it's, you know, Trump and...
Right. Josh, let me go back and ask you another question that I think is very, very relevant here. What's your opinion about some type of perhaps conspiracy or organization behind this movement right now, the movement of violence that's going on in society today? Got an opinion on that?
I do, and I don't think, I wouldn't use the word conspiracy, because that automatically conjures up, you know, notions of people being overly paranoid. It is not a conspiracy. It is a fact that all of these organizations, including the ones in the 60s, right up to the ones today, pay professional organizers and instigators to gather crowds and motivate them to protest. In fact, many times if you were in a major city, if you were to walk past the picket line for a restaurant, for example, restaurant union striking because they don't like the restaurant's policy or something like that, most of those protesters are paid. They're paid protesters. And I know this because I had friends who did it. I know this because I was offered the opportunity to do it. It's a job. They get paid a decent amount of money, $25, $30 an hour to work a protest line. Much of these same people, if they decide to make a career out of it, will end up moving into organizing protests, rallies, and, of course, ultimately, insurrections.
Josh, who's paying them?
Well, that's a good question. That I don't know the answer to. But clearly, I know somebody is.
Okay.
You have to follow the money to get that answer. I mean, I could serve up the, you know, the answer that you hear being served up on Fox News all the time, George Soros, but I don't know that for a fact. That's just
right.
Something I hear.
Right. Good point. Thank you. Continue, Josh. Thank you.
Sure. So it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a business. And whatever the agenda is behind these protests, the agenda is being served by having professionals who organize and rally. And some have more talent than others. And, of course, the more talented ones get paid more. Now, that doesn't mean that these people aren't true believers. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm saying they hire in salespeople, you know, or ex-Wall Street brokers, you know, to rally people in the streets. The people who they hire are motivated ideologically as well, not just by money. But not all of them. Some people are just very good at what they do. So you have a movement that is being financed by unseen forces that are difficult to trace. I'm sure if someone decided to audit BLM, which is the only organization that we can identify that's an actual incorporated entity, as opposed to Antifa, which is just a loose affiliation. I'm sure if you manage to audit BLM, you'd probably find that they're being financed, you know, by someone who has an agenda behind what's happening, behind disruption.
That's absolutely a fascinating statement, Joshua. That's what was happening when your dad was in the business, so to speak. And I believe that's true. Okay, a little different. Well, how's it different?
Well, because it's much more organized now. It's much more corporatized now. Back then, the people who were financing protests were not necessarily, a covert cabal of anarchists. They were, most of the people who were involved came from privilege. So most of the people in the Weather Underground came from privilege. The famous townhouse in downtown New York that was blown up when weathermen blew themselves up when they were making bombs. This was in 1970, I believe. The townhouse, one of the weathermen who lived in that townhouse, her father owned the townhouse. He was wealthy. So the people back then came from money, and a lot of the financing for the New Left came from people who were actually in the New Left who were true believers. Today, I'm not sure that same truth exists. Today, I do think you have people who are bad actors within those organizations who aren't necessarily true believers, who are in it for the agenda or in it for the money. So that's the difference.
Why would somebody be in it for the agenda, Josh?
They're Marxists.
Okay. That's a pretty simple. That's a very simple answer and probably very accurate. Go ahead and expound on that one.
Well, they believe in Marxist philosophy, and like my father did. My father was a big Marxist. They believe that the end justifies the means. They believe in revolution. They believe that imperialism and capitalism is always bad. There's really very little nuance in their philosophies, and I've had discussions with many, you know, short Marxists. Some of the people that I spoke with who were radicals in my father's cell and other New Left groups, when I interviewed them, they were in well into their 40s. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, ironically, a lot of them had kind of transitioned into more bourgeois lifestyles. Some of them admitted, yes, you know, I would have been called a reactionary by someone in their 20s, you know, back in 1969. Now they, you know, lived in townhouses and drove BMWs and sent their kids to private school. So I found that particularly ironic. But it helped me understand why they all felt my father was a hero, because my father did not come from that. My father came from North Tonawanda, upstate New York. He came from, I guess, what some people would call white trash. And he went into the movement without the safety net that a lot of his compadres went into the movement with, his comrades and friends and people that he conspired with. They all came from some privilege, and their families could afford to hire decent lawyers and get them off charges. My father had just that privilege.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to make you an offer right now that I don't think you can refuse. Just call me Vito Caroloni. Here's the offer. Any questions that you have, I think Joshua Melville has brought up some very, very prudent points. And what I would like to say is this, if you have any questions at all for Josh regarding anything that he has said, regarding anything that I have said, I'd like you to file those questions on the blog. I personally will call Joshua up, get him back on the show, and all of those questions will be answered. The only thing I would like you to do is please identify where you're coming from. Don't need a real name. All I need to know is, did you get this information from the radio show? Joshua, Thank you so much, Mr. Melville. Appreciate it.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.